My name is Thomas Bierer.
And I'm Timo Herroth.
And together we welcome you to our podcast, EFZ Talking Finance. In our daily work, we are concerned with the financial world, its digitization, and the topic of sustainability. This 11th episode of the podcast revolves around sustainability-linked loans, and we are glad to welcome Dr. Roland Mees, Head of Sustainability at ING.
Hello, Roland. It's nice to meet you from our side and that you join us today with the EFZ Talking Finance. Coming to the first question, could you please give us a short introduction of your personal career steps and how you became the Director of Sustainable Finance at ING? For a better understanding, what is, in your opinion, the most interesting part of your current job?
Yes, sure. Well, I started already quite some time ago, I must say, with studies in mathematics, in business administration. And then I entered banking. It was the late 80s of the previous century. And it was the time that business really took up. So there was not any concern about sustainability. In the early 90s, mid-90s, I was celebrating the closure of large transactions financing oil pipelines, refineries, floating production vessels. So I have been there also financing these large projects, which were also at that time not very sustainable, but nobody bothered about it. It was just great that we were able to bring those projects online, or let's say commission those projects together with the sponsors. So that was my first time at ING. Then I worked at Triodos Bank as well. And then I returned after the internet bubble of early this century. I returned to ING. And there I spent quite a number of years implementing the Basel II credit risk models. So that means, you know, the change from Basel I to Basel II, banks, large banks, were allowed to make use and develop their own models for probability of default, LGD and EAD. And that's what I exactly did a number of years, and also report about the RWA, risk-weighted assets developments, economic profits, etc. And then alongside that full-time job, I started again studying philosophy. Philosophy in business. I woke up actually with regard to a couple of large corporate defaults, like Enron, like WorldCom, Tyco. All those corporate defaults made me think, well, business ethics, where do we stand? Did it make any difference in the past two decades, for example? And my answer was clearly, well, probably not. I need to dig deeper. I need to know more about this. And that's why I started studying philosophy, which then resulted in a PhD project, which ended 2017. So then I defended my dissertation. And during that period, I became aware, and my dissertation is also about taking sustainable action. So why is it so difficult for people to reduce their meat consumption, to take the train or the bus instead of the car, to make fewer flights, long distance flights, for example? Why is that so difficult? And that, let's say, coincided, it went together with the early development of sustainable finance, which then resulted in this creation of the sustainability linked loan, which in fact is a nudge. Yeah? It's a small push into the right direction. And that is how it came about. So my work on my dissertation and my work at ING on the sustainability linked loan, in fact, fitted very well together in one sort of storyline. So that is in fact my short biography, professional biography. If you ask me what is my most interesting part, the most interesting part of my job currently, I would say it's about the connection between sustainability and finance. So literally speaking, I come across many companies. I talk to CFOs, I talk to treasurers, I talk to, well, many people within those companies, the largest companies in the world, actually, exchange listed, very large Mittelstand firms in Germany or in Switzerland or in Austria, France, everywhere in the EMEA region. And what always strikes me that even today, the treasury department and the sustainability department are very much separated from each other. And it takes an effort to connect these two. Yeah? And if they get connected and finance starts to take sustainability seriously, then many, many nice things can happen. So then you get some sort of organizational dynamics in the company. And then also the sustainability people feel recognized. Yeah. So finance, let's be honest, finance is a very important function in a company. And once finance takes sustainability seriously, then things start to move.
Yeah, this also leads me to your very interesting article you contributed to the EFZ financing study 2021. So in this article, you mentioned the Katowice commitment, in which five international banks stated to commit to measure the climate alignment of their lending portfolio and to explore ways to progressively steer financial flows through core lending towards the goal of the Paris Agreement. So as you mentioned, in 2017, ING introduced the then so-called sustainability improvement loans. Nowadays, they are called sustainability-linked loans. But those loans, they have the special feature that the interest rate is coupled to the sustainability score of the respective company. Could you briefly introduce our listeners to the price mechanism of this special product, which, as the name says, is directly related to the sustainability of the respective companies? So how does that work in practice?
Indeed. So what we in fact did, we drafted a piece of loan documentation in which it is defined what the sustainability achievement of a company should look like. Now, there are two versions of it. First, you can link the interest margin to the ESG rating of the company. Or, this is the second version, you can link it to specific KPIs, specific goals, like CO2 emission reduction, for example, that you can link the margin to. And both of these features, the ESG rating and the KPIs, need to be verified by an independent party. So the ESG rating typically is verified and assessed by an ESG rating agency. And the KPIs are verified either by when you design the KPIs by a so-called second opinion provider. And once the KPIs are implemented and the company needs to report about progress, then the auditor typically verifies whether the KPIs have been met. Now, in practice, it goes like this, that you define together with the company what it means to make an ambitious step, to really take it forward, to really improve the rating of the company with a large step to the extent possible. It needs also to be realistic. But, you know, we are human beings, and that ties into my dissertation. We are not very strong in terms of taking stable action, so we need a bit of help. And we need a bit of discussion that, for example, double-sided printing, yeah, is not enough for meeting the criteria of an ambitious step. That is something we should realize. So we have a rather thorough methodology on the ESG rating side to determine what it means to take an ambitious step, even if you are already very good with your ESG rating. So there is some sort of equilibrium, yeah. So you cannot improve with the same number of points until infinity. Yeah, there is some sort of leveling off once you are already very good with your sustainability rating. Then the next step can be a smaller step than the previous step. So that is all acknowledged. At the same time, we know how to find this balance between ambition and realism on the other hand. With the KPIs, it's likewise. We would like to see that KPIs are, for example, science-based. So they refer to goals which are justified and agreed by science. That could be the science-based initiative or the International Energy Agency or another very industry-specific agency which confirms or which has drafted certain scenarios for the particular industry. And that is what we make use of as well. And then it works in practice like this. You formulate an initial value, either for the ESG rating or for the KPIs. And then you start measuring. And after 1 year, you get back the company reports about what they have done. Normally speaking, the ESG rating agency issues a new rating, or when it is KPI based, the company releases a integrated report or a sustainability report, a separate sustainability report, and then we look it up, which is then audited, as I said, which should be audited, and then we know whether the company has made progress sufficiently or not with regard to the KPIs. And all this is then embodied in, well, one page, 1.5 pages of additional loan documentation. So you implement typically in your loan documentation a few definitions and then the, let's say, the incentivization mechanism, which is then linked to the sustainability achievements. That ties into the topic of credit risk versus ESG. That is, but we can discuss that. Indeed, the mechanism works like this. If the company meets its targets, which are indeed ambitious and realistic at the same time, then they receive this discount, small basis number of basis points, reduction of the interest margin. If they do not meet those targets, if they in fact do the mirror image, that means they not only stay neutral, but they really deteriorate, yeah, or deteriorate, I should go down, then they pay the premium.
Roland, thanks for this information. I was wondering, how could you cross-check this information in terms of developments? You said meeting the needs, not meeting the needs, then getting a rating agency to rate this development. What kind of data plays a role, and how are you really able to cross-check the information, especially the information coming from the companies?
Yeah, so we spoke about these two forms, ESG rating linked and KPI linked. The ESG rating linked is actually based on a questionnaire. So it's the ESG rating agency has certain indicators that they assess, and the company has to provide information so as to do the assessment. For example, water management. If you have a real estate company, then the real estate company should provide data and policy and outcomes on the water management in its buildings. Very practically, so the flushing toilets, yeah, is an indicator in real estate. Yeah, so that is things that the company has to show. Okay, how much water is being used in my buildings? So and that is then benchmarked by the EG rating agency, and from there there is a judgment on the question: how well does this company do its water management? So that's independently assessed, and the ESG rating agency is also independent, so they issue this rating, and therefore it can be used in loan documentation. In the KPI version, it's slightly different because indeed we rely on the non-financial data of the company. And that's a very, very important point. We require that this non-financial data is audited. So it has to have limited assurance by the auditor, and they have to go through the processes. They have to go through, they have to take a sample. They have to really form a judgment on the non-financial data of this company. That means also that the KPI approach is not eligible for everyone. So it means that your processes, that your data capturing needs to be quite mature in order to qualify for the KPI approach. That's definitely something. So we see mainly large companies who have already experience with ESG, with sustainability. We see those companies mainly embarking on the KPI approach. Many times these companies have already a very good ESG rating. Yeah? So they are already on the way, on the journey. So that is basically the observation, the ESG rating based and the KPI based approach. And they both rely on independent assessment of the achievements.
I think that's highly interesting. Maybe this also opens kind of a new market field, a new market segment for audit companies, that they dig deeper into the non-financial aspects of a company. But this is not the main interest today of this podcast, but I think this is also an interesting aspect one should bear in mind. So I would like to come back to another question with regards to the interest rate. So for traditional companies or traditional, let's call them non-sustainable bank loans, there we have a certain cost component, which one is a risk premium. You already mentioned before that you came up with these models in your kind of earlier life with this probability of default, loss given default, exposure at default and stuff like this. So the risk premium is based on this probability of default as one crucial component for the pricing. And could you explain to what extent a higher sustainability relates to a lower probability of default in the future?
Well, indeed. I mean, the academic literature actually is quite aligned on this question. And I can mention a few trends there. So first of all, you can ask, what is the credit risk of a company by looking at their credit rating? You can also ask, what is the credit risk of a company by looking at what they pay in the market for their debt? So how are the credit default swaps priced? How are bonds priced? How are loans priced? And surprisingly or not surprisingly, both bodies of literature show that sustainable companies do significantly better than non-sustainable companies if it comes to measuring risk by looking at the credit rating and by looking at risk in terms of debt pricing. So that means sustainable companies have a better credit risk rating, and the causality of that association indeed goes from sustainability towards credit risk rating, not the other way around. And sustainable companies have better debt pricing. So, and that's all controlled for various variables like size, like leverage, like EBITDA, like all sorts of ratios that have been included in this statistical analysis. So, yeah, it makes a lot of sense for a company to work on sustainability because it will improve their credit rating, which in fact already would lead to a better loan pricing or debt pricing, as we know. But even independently from the credit risk rating, sustainable companies obtain better pricing for their debt, which indeed could be around 10 basis points. Yeah? So there is this is significant for companies. So you, intuitively, you would hypothesize if you would study data of those companies and pricings and deals, you would hypothesize, for example, I always use, for example, a company in Spain, in the south of Spain, which is relying on clean water. Well, if that company does not have a contingency plan in place to cater for the situation that clean water will become scarce, then as a banker, I would say, this is a pretty risky situation. Why? Because we all know that clean water in the south of Spain will become very scarce and already is scarce during certain summer periods. So you better, as a company, organize your business process such that you are very efficient with clean water and that you have secured the supply somehow in order to overcome the potential interruption of your operation. So these are the thoughts about credit risk and sustainability, and the ties between those are becoming clearer and clearer at the moment.
Thanks, Roland. Coming shortly back to this sustainability-linked loans and the market situation, in your article in the financing study, you've written that the market growth was astonishing. In 2018, the sustainability-linked loans made up to 0.7% of the entire syndicated loan market, so I think still quite big potential. Do you have any newer numbers of the market share? And what can we expect for the future in terms of the market structure? In a few years, do you think that all loans will be linked to sustainability scores of the debtor, or is it possible that sustainability will be integrated into traditional risk, respectively, pricing models for loan? What is your opinion on that?
Yeah, very interesting question, actually. A lot has happened also recently, given that we are getting out of a pandemic situation. So we should take that into account as well. Well, I have some numbers indeed from Loan Radar, and I'm talking about the syndicated green and sustainability linked loan volume. So that's one figure. Bear in mind that, say, three quarters is about sustainability linked loans only. And the rest is green. Green is simply a lot smaller. So indeed, in 2018, we had a total of 47 billion. Then in 2019, this exploded to 132 billion. So that's more than 180% growth. And then the pandemic started to kick in, which meant that lots of companies looked for liquidity support in order to overcome the crisis, the pandemic crisis. But still, in 2020, there was 160 billion of green and sustainability linked loans syndicated. So that's still 21% growth. Now, if you look at 21, it's astonishing that only in the first half of 21, this figure grew to 290 billion. So again, the entire production of the first half of 21 is already almost, 180% times the entire production of 2020. So that is astonishing. So probably we will see another doubling in 21 of the entire production in 2020. So that is on the figures. Well, as to your the other part of your question, what will the future look like? Well, we in the meantime we have seen the European Union coming on stream with their Fit for 55 program. So that means as a European Union, we want to reduce 55% greenhouse gas emissions compared to a year which I forgot. Probably it's 2010, but it's a significant reduction. Now, that means that companies really have to step up, banks have to step up, corporates have to step up. If you ask me, the sustainability-linked loan feature, well, will probably remain for some time. However, given my previous response to the question of the link, the association between credit risk and sustainability, it might very well happen that the regulator will push harder and will say, sorry, sustainability is not anymore a nice to have, it's a must have, which means if you do not have a sustainability policy in place, nor you have committed significantly to a sustainability goal, then you will pay a higher price. Then indeed, it becomes an event of default or a covenant, or indeed, it will hurt you a lot more than today when you do not do anything on sustainability. Yeah, it's time to act now. We now have to face the difficult issues. We cannot postpone until 2040 or 2050. So, for example, companies that pledge, I will be climate neutral in 2050. Well, that's not a very ambitious statement anymore. Yeah, that is just regular, everyone does it and everyone should do it. The question is more, what short-term ambitious goals do you want to achieve in 25, 27, 30, 35? That's the time period that we need to take the most significant action. Look at the UN Sustainability Development Goals. Yeah, so those need to be, or we need to have achieved significant progress by 2030. Well, if we do not, then the carbon budget runs out. So we do not have, as world community, any more sufficient carbon available to continue our current lifestyles. So yes, it will become harder, the going gets tough in sustainable development in general, and that will probably mean that we will need to become stricter and somewhat more robust, and that could mean in the financial world, which could mean, like you suggest, for example, a pricing ratchet, which means which ties into regulating ESG rating agencies, for example, regulating the KPIs by means of the EU taxonomy, and being more prescriptive about what sort of levels of KPIs must be reached and how specifically brown companies would need to change their business models.
I think this is highly interesting to see in which direction the market moves, what will the regulator do, and I fully support your statement that we have to act now One could also say the short term matters the most, because in the long run we are all dead anyway. So I think it's interesting that we need to step up now and act. And therefore, our last question ties into this by asking you, if you think back and imagine that you're a student, for example, at our university, and you're interested in financial markets, how would you position yourself in this complex world driven by great changes coming from topics such as orientation towards sustainability and also external stakeholders, while also being in the midst of a digital transformation?
Yeah, so looking back and looking forward, I work with students at the Free University in Amsterdam. I work with students in Groningen, in the north of the Netherlands. So I know a bit what's going on. We have lots of young people joining our team as analysts of our, or as an intern. So the world of sustainable finance now is really booming. It's growing. I very much encourage young people to take it on and raise the bar and really step into this world, see the connections. There is a lot to be learned, and but also a lot to be contributed by the new generation. It's really interesting times. A lot of change is going on. It's really an opportunity to get to the heart of things. It's not small stuff what we are talking about here. It's not peanuts. It's not changing a few commas and dots in a document. No, it's a very dynamic, very demanding. So if you have energy to bring to the table, if you have your studies in place, then go out, I would say, and change the banks, change the financial world, change the corporates, and make them more sustainable. As I said, it's about acting now, not waiting, acting now, facing the most difficult issues first, leave the easy stuff for later, and really take it on. And don't wait, don't hesitate, jump into the water and swim. That would be my advice.
So I think these are highly motivating and encouraging tips for the future. So Roland, thank you very much for your time.
Thanks a lot, Roland.
Thank you. You're welcome. It was a nice talking to you, and happy to join again.